Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Tough on Art. I want to let you know that due to lots of requests, I'm going to be offering the Tough Method to Getting an Art Gallery again on Sunday, April 24th. This is a live 5-hour workshop via Zoom that will leave you with all the knowledge and step-by-step method for getting the gallery or galleries of your dreams. Whether those galleries are local or far away, this is the workshop that you want to join. So sign up at gentuff.com/getgalleries. That's gentuff.com/getgalleries. So on today's show, I'm going to be speaking to Marie Cameron. Marie is a realist painter and mixed media assemblage artist living and working in Los Gatos, California, which is in the Bay Area. Her work ranges from large-scale realist paintings with images from around the natural world, some creating repetitive, kaleidoscopic images, and others that are more quiet and contemplative, such as birds perched on dainty teacups. I love those. During the pandemic, Marie created and launched her Rainbow Project, where she embroidered rainbows on found vintage photographs, creating new and really super charming narratives. She invited the world into her studio, one person at a time, because it was at the height of the pandemic, to take in her wall of rainbows that she created. At a time when the world felt painfully disconnected, this project created community and optimism amongst the awful backdrop that we all dealt with of isolation and despair. I hope you'll find this conversation really interesting with Marie, and thanks for joining me. Hi, everybody. This is Jen, and welcome to Tough on Art. And today I have Marie Cameron with me. I'm so excited, Marie, to have you here. It's really great to see you.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here, Jen.
So tell me about where you are right now.
So I'm sitting in my studio in Los Gatos, California. It's bright and sunny out here. We've had a ton of rain, but right now it's gorgeous. Daffodils are coming up and my garden's starting to look good. So I'm grateful for that because the rest is a shit show.
You got daffodils already in January?
Yeah,
California for you.
Well, it's the climate change too. It's earlier every year. So I sort of clock that, but...
Yeah. So how long have you been in Los Gatos?
Well, we came to California, my husband and I, in 97. So yeah, a while now. And Los Gatos specifically since 2009, I guess. Yeah. And I had the studio built soon after that. So it's home. It's home.
Yeah. So where are you coming from? What part of the world?
Well, I was born in New York City and we went to Nova Scotia when I was just little and my mother had Yeah. So I was born in New York City and my father passed away quite early on. So my mom moved to Maine and then Nova Scotia, where I grew up with my brother. And I went to school there in the Maritimes in New Brunswick and I met my husband in Toronto and we lived there for a couple of years before moving to California. So, you know, we were here for the dot-com bust, which is like his jam. And as an artist, I could be anywhere. So
yeah,
this was a good place to be. I think he offered me, Colorado or Texas or California? And I said, give me the ocean. That's the one I want.
Yeah. Awesome. So your husband works in tech, I take it in some way? Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't say what he does or who he's working for. Is it one of those... NDA
thing everywhere, right? So he's in a startup right now. It's with storage, and he's pain when I talk about it because I usually get it wrong. But anyway, he's very supportive.
Yeah, oh, that's great. So, how long have you considered yourself an artist? Like, tell me about your personal art history.
So always, because my mom worked in ceramics when I was little. She had a ceramic studio that as a new widow, she started in her basement. And she gave classes, and so I grew up with. Potter's wheels and molds all over the place. And I drew. And my family was always like doing stuff, whether it was embroidering or knitting or refinishing furniture or tearing down walls. It was just, and Christmas ornaments. So we just always worked with our hands. Yeah. And when I wanted to go to art school, it was like, yeah, I go to art school. So very supportive. And yeah, I always loved making things.
So where did you go for school? Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I was in Nova Scotia, and there was a conceptual school called NASCAD in Halifax, which was a possibility, but I went with Mount Allison University in New Brunswick. Alex Colville had been there, Christopher Pratt. So it was known for its realism. And I thought that's where I wanted to go. Cause when I thought of painting, I thought of really like wanting to, you know, paint what I saw. So that made sense for me. Although I love conceptual art now, but that's where I am.
Yeah. So you, in the beginning, did you focus mostly on realism? Was that
where you focused? I did a lot of portraits and seascapes. That was the kind of thing I did. When I went to university, I was dabbling more in sculpture and photography, which is really cool. I did some murals with 3D. I did a series of Wrapped Women because I did some traveling to Pakistan. And I really loved the idea of purdah. And I would take all these fantastic, beautiful sari fabrics, as well as like garbage bags, and wrap these cocoon-like figures that look like candy, and they look like, you know, caterpillars, and hang them in front of a painting. And then later they got stacked up like wood or piled like seeds. And yeah, I really enjoyed that branching out into materials as well. And when I had finished school, I applied for a Canada Council Explorations Grant, which is this really wonderful program where you're allowed, if you win it, you're allowed to focus on an area of interest. And mine was working on the story of a church that I had owned, but I bought when I was still a student. It had floated from one seacoast town to another.
You bought a church?
I bought a church when I was young. I love antiques. I love architecture. And all these abandoned churches in Nova Scotia were just storing hay and fishing hooks and all this stuff. And I thought, I can afford this. So I bought one. It was beautiful. It was a little goth piece that had originally been in Margaretsville. It was Methodist, and then it became Catholic, and then it became a school for a while. And then they floated it along the Bay of Fundy down to another town in Morden, where they hauled it back up. And it was in service probably into the 70s when it was deconsecrated. And then it was used to store stuff. And so I bought it and I, you know, helped fix it up and I lived there for a while until I got, it's hard to make a living as an artist. So I quickly thought, I need some money so I can fix this roof. And I took a job as a designer at Siegel Pewter, where I designed tabletop and frames and pewter. So I was one of the senior designers there doing the drawings.
Oh, wow. Okay. So the other thing that I heard as you were talking that really piqued my interest was Pakistan, trips to Pakistan. What was that about?
Oh, that was such a great opportunity. So when I was really little, we were a host family for the Canada World Youth Program. It's kind of like Canadian version of the Peace Corps. And that made such an impression on me. So when I came of age and was through with school, I did 1 year at art school, and then I got into this. Actually, no, I deferred it. That's what happened. It's so long ago, right? So I deferred it to go on this program, and we spent half the time in northern Saskatchewan with a Pakistani counterpart, who I still love, my Samina. And then the other half was for us, it was rural Punjab in Pakistan. And that was just such a formative experience. You know, I was 18 going on 19, and it just really changed my worldview too. And it changed like my home view too, because you mature a lot when you're away and you see your town from a completely different perspective, and your life and your role as a woman and all
culture,
of these things.
Everything,
it's just mind blowing. And those things really stay with you a lifetime. So I'm so glad that I put off art for a little bit. Then I went back to art and I thought, oh, this is so selfish. And I did a year at University of Toronto in International Development Studies. I thought, I'm so much better at art. I think I'll leave this to the people who are really good at it. And I went back to art, finished my degree. And
So it must be really hard to see what's going on in Pakistan now. I mean, the last decade.
I did go back to to Pakistan in, let's see, I first was 85, 86. The second trip was 95, like a decade later. Mm-hmm. And then I went to traveling throughout India with my husband just before we were married. So it was interesting. There's so many improvements that are happening in Pakistan too. So there's lots of good stuff, but you know, there's a lot of militarism going on here in the States too. So it's hard to be a global citizen and be aware of what's going on.
Yeah, totally. Okay. So you went to university for like what, international studies? And then you decided that, so was the international, the pursuit of that, was that based on your experience with Pakistan and?
Yeah. I wanted to learn more. Mm-hmm. So we studied things like, well, my personal studies were the salinization of the Indus Valley. So there was some ecological things, there were political things, there were military things. It was just really, really fascinating. And I love the people that program attracted. Most of them are still working in the field doing great things. So It's exciting. But, you know, one thing I felt about development was, you know, a lot of projects, unless they're grassroots, kind of fail. You have a lot of great intention people going in and superimposing their ideas, and the projects are not, they're a waste of money, or the local people end up helping the foreigner who's come in to save them.
Right.
All of that. So I thought, you know, I'm going to go with my skill set, and there's many ways to be a global citizen, and maybe I can say more through my art. And some of my art has gone on to talk about social justice, and that. So environmentalism has been an important theme in my art, as well as social justice. And I think just really, I'm going to probably stop and have you get that out there too. Why don't you ask me something about that?
I will.
Yeah, I stumble over those things. But yeah, so I think that some of the themes that I feel are going through my work would be the environmental conservation, which is a global concern. Mm-hmm. And I think one of our biggest concerns. I listen a lot to NPR, and I hear both environmental things that influence my work. When I hear about the wasting of the starfish, you know, I think, oh my God, that will go with my critical mass series. And I want to know more and research more and paint that. And then when, you know, there are all the incarceration of unattended minors at the southern border, I painted paintings of La Niña and El Niño, the children with tattoos covering their body, sort of claiming them as territory, and then having elements like butterflies covering their body to protect them, as the monarchs being such a great symbol for migration. Those pieces keep popping up. Even my birds and teacups pieces, which are seemingly really beautiful, and beauty is important to me because I think that is the entryway to your heart. And if people are attracted to something because it's beautiful, they're curious, they're going to want to know more and spend time with that painting. And it also drives me to want to spend, you know, 3 months painting little seashells. So my birds and teacups work has these beautiful birds and gorgeous antique teacups and flower arrangements that match the teacups. And you can look at it on the surface level and say, oh, that's just a beautiful painting. And it's a great excuse to paint with gorgeous colors and subject matters that I love. But it's also this curious juxtaposition of a wild bird in a domestic situation where it doesn't belong, and this manifestation of flowers, which match the teacup, which is kind of weird, but beautiful. And then like the idea that, you know, the antiques of the teacup kind of references how wild birds populations are really suffering, and we've lost so many, and that they're kind of becoming an antique. So there's that kind of subtle thing that doesn't knock you over the head, but it's there underneath the painting.
Yes, that's one of the things that really drew me to your work, were these really interesting juxtapositions and the out of context kind of situations that, you know, they have a surrealist flavor to them. But just this morning, I was reading about how puffins were becoming extinct because of climate change. And it's like, you know, every day we hear about this, and it's, you know, I don't know if I think most people have gotten numb to it, but I've gotten to the point where it's almost too difficult emotionally to continuously read about this, you know, just the complete collapse of the planet, really. It's, you know, it seems so obvious to me. It's just like this glaringly obvious thing. And yet, you know, people don't seem to really be paying attention, at least not paying attention enough to do anything. And so I see the power in your work of, you know, what you said, like having this entrance, like sort of the aesthetic quality, having an entrance to conversation about these things. So tell me more about how you go through your creative process. Like, what do you, is something sort of bothering you, like climate change, specifically shells or something like that? And then you decide to, what's your process with it? Like, how do these things unfold for you?
Well, I'm a collector, so I pick up objects as I go around. I'm a bit of a magpie. So I have, you know, shells that I've picked off the beach in BC, and I have conch shells from when I was in Bahamas. And the intimacy of having those objects in my studio and seeing them in relationship to other things, like the flip-flops that are hanging out in my conch shells, and they're all of a sudden they're together, and it, the flip-flop is a symbol for the waste that we generate, and it's a symbol for the footprint of humanity. And yet they're beautiful, they're pink, and so are these conch shells. And yet, you know, tourism is really knocking them to pieces, and overconsumption, and their territories are, they need like so many hectares in order to reproduce. And in the Anthropocene, we just keep pushing out our territory that we claim, and there's less and less space for these species to survive as we mow through them. And you know, I love stuff, so I'm complicit in this, and we're all complicit in this because we live, and this is just sort of the condition. So I rotate through my series because I have a really big shell series, which is the Critical Masses, and it's really labor intensive and detailed, but on a huge scale. And so I will, as I'm working on that, my mind is sort of liberated to think about other elements and listen and research. So really the ideas just keep piling up. And then I'll switch over to a bird and teacup series, which are smaller and more satisfying as they come together really quickly. And I will go out, this is a fun part, I will go out and shoot the birds in the wild. And so I have all these images on my Photoshop, and I'll pull them together with these beautiful teacups that are filled with flowers that I grow in my garden. And I get the perfect lighting and I shoot that together. So I have this scaffolding that I'm working with. But with my shell pieces, I have the actual shell and I'll hold it in my hand and rotate it as I work. So I have a combination of the real objects plus the photography that can help me when I want to do a surreal element that's, you know, superimposed on my critical masses. Yeah, there's, that's it. Also, I have a lot of pieces of things that are just float around in my studio, and they eventually find each other, mm-hmm. which is a slower process. But for instance, there's a piece that you see behind me. It's kind of a religious piece in that it was an old frame. It had a mirror in it that I conked out, and I added images of the ocean because for me, it's something, it's a starburst that you would see around the Virgin Mary, probably mm-hmm. the Virgin of Guadalupe. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, what's holy for me? And I thought the ocean is holy for me. So I painted the ocean in it. And it hung there in my studio for years until I found, like, I was looking for that element. What can I finish this piece? And on eBay, I found this wonderful holy water font that's made of like brass with copper in it. And, you know, 30 seconds later, I had it installed in the middle of the painting. And all of a sudden, wow, it says all water is holy now. And then I went out to the ocean and I got some Pacific water, ocean water, sea water. And I poured it into the vessel. And then while I was on an exhibit at the New Museums of Los Gatos, it started in a beautiful show called Water Lines. The crystals started to form and creep out of the holy water font in this beautiful turquoise blue color, which matched the paint. So, you know, things, they click, they linger, they click, they go at their own pace, and you just sort of try to catch up with them.
Do you keep track of your ideas like in a sketchbook, or how do you do that? Because you said you came up with a lot of ideas. So how do you keep track of everything?
My mind is crazy. I have a few sketchbooks, but they're not organized. And I love the immediacy of going right to the painting. And so I cue them up in my head, and the good ones stick, right? And if I lose a few, I don't have time to get to them anyway. I need a couple of lifetimes to paint everything that I want to.
Yeah, you're very prolific. How many paintings do you think you do in a month, or pieces?
It really depends, because if I'm working small scale, like I did a 50-50 project for the Sanchez Art Center. It's an annual fundraiser they have. And I didn't have 50 days, so I did, you know, I did three a day on these tiny little 6x6 squares that were painting with encaustic on them. And then my big 64 square inch paintings, they take 3 months to do all the little details. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge range. And of course, I do my embroidery on old vintage photographs. And I've been, during the pandemic, I wanted to search for hope and that feeling of awe. And I thought the rainbow really represented that. And I needed something kind of healing for myself and meditative. So I switched over to do those. And really, I had a process where I would do one a day and post it and share it with people at the end of the day. And that really helped me deal with 2020, 2021.
Yeah.
But it's time to paint again. So
yeah, that project I was just about to bring up. So I'm glad you said that. You had the most, one of the things that I loved was not only the dedication and sort of the hyper focus to these vintage photographs that you embroidered with these rainbow colored floss. And then at the end, you had this, what was really awesome was that you know, it was like a project from start to finish, right? And then at the end, you had this install in your studio that you'd planned to have during open studios. And you had this gorgeous wall covered with these pieces. Can you talk about how that went and how this idea sort of manifested?
It was quite natural. I began the pieces. Well, it started with a rainbow at the ocean, and I was looking for like something that I could work on during the pandemic that I could do by my, you know, air filter, and it wouldn't be filled with, because we were also having those fires and the air was horrible and I didn't want to work with oil paints. So it all came together when I saw this rainbow. I thought, that's what I need in my life. And what am I going to do? So I found photographs online because I was really inspired by Sue Williams Zakor from England, who works with these very subtle palettes. And they're very meditative images that have reverence for nature. And I wanted to do something that was getting that feeling of reverence for the past and kind of an anchor that we're going to be okay. Things have happened in the past, but there's hope. And they got through stuff. We're going to get through stuff. And that connection with other people and with community while I was in my own space. So I just started working on them for myself to keep sane. And as they amassed, people were interested in them. And I knew I wanted to share them, but I didn't want to sell them because I didn't want to deal with money during the pandemic. And thank God we were in a position where that wasn't a deal. So I said, you know, if you want to reserve one, I'm happy to do that. But I kind of want to see them all together, because what if there was like this whole wall of rainbows? And so that was really just as a feeling that I my project was hashtag more rainbows because I couldn't get enough rainbows. So I needed to see all of the rainbows together. And I let go of a few of them for, you know, fundraisers. There was one for families who'd lost their homes during the Santa Cruz fires. There was art in the time of Corona at New Museums of Los Gatos, which was the money was shared with NUMU and with us and with another. I think they donated more money to the community as well. So those projects were important to support. And it was all really like, how much joy can we share? And so the final project, you had all these people following online. I started making them into postcards with my friend Christiane, who wrote these beautiful verses on the back of the postcard. And we would send them out all over the world to anyone who wanted a rainbow and gave us their address. So that was super fun. And then when people were really invested in the images and tuning in each day to see, well, what is she going to do now? Like, how many different ways can you do a rainbow? And each beautiful photograph really kind of dictated what it needed. And so I love that process too. It was like a little daily gift for me. And when I had the open studio open pop-up when we called uncle, like when we opened up in California, and I thought, okay, here's a time where we're at a place that's safe enough. And my studio, I will have like just one person at a time or a couple of people on these appointments. There were 45 minute windows. And it was just the most beautiful thing that it was like a joyous reunion with your community. And they would bring a friend that I hadn't met before. And we would sit and, or, you know, stand in front of the rainbows and kind of look at like, this was our year. It's almost like a diary. And it was also like a collective photo album of like, these images were so familiar and yet they're not. And everyone was so emotional because of of what we've been through, about the stories that would bring up for them about their family. And it was gorgeous. It was the most beautiful thing. And I've never done a period like this where I just separated and said, okay, for a year, I'm just going to do this. And it enabled me to have this perfect arc of, here, I'm doing this, I'm sharing this, I'm putting it out into the world. And I like told the press about it, and the press covered it, and it was lovely. And then to show it, and then to let the pieces go. And then I even was asked to teach a workshop at the San Francisco School of Needlework and Design in the fall. So I was able to pass on the rainbows to other people. And all of that was so beautiful. And I'm taking a lot of lessons from that. And I want to finish up some more projects and allow for time to really pivot and do something that is of the moment, of the heart, and just see where it happens, what happens, where it goes.
So you're thinking about taking on another really big project like this. Is that something that you would consider? Like something that's really, you know, hyper-focused and long-term?
Or? Yeah, I see a lot of good out of that. Though I do, like, I have these projects that cycling through, and I realized I need to finish them too. So yeah. Number one on my plate is my Critical Mass series, which I have close to 10 now. I'm working on a oyster piece right now, which is about how these bicarbonate shells are really melting in the acidification of the ocean, and it's impacting that species a great deal. I want to see that in a museum. It needs to go out into the world now. Mm-hmm. And the birds and teacups, I have a beautiful stack of teacups in my studio, and I'd love to, you know, finish that project and then, you know, have the teacups go back out into the world. One time it was really lovely. The Art Docents of Los Gatos hosted a fundraiser in my studio out in the garden, and it was catered, and everyone drank out of my teacups. They have the teacup and they'd have flowers that matched it. And so I'd love to do an event like that where maybe the people take the teacup home, or the collectors who have bought the painting have the teacup as well. But yeah, I think you, as an artist, you have to go where your heart takes you, and it's good to see it through too, because then it liberates both space in your studio and space in your mind to conceive of other things.
Mm-hmm. And keep going, right?
Yeah.
So any plans for the future? Any ideas? What do you see for yourself moving forward?
Moving forward, it's always so hard to see in the future. I have, with my Critical Mass series, there are paintings, but I'd love to see some sculptures that are related to the pieces as well. So masses of pieces, maybe working collaboratively with others. I'm going to start that again. Maybe working collaboratively with other artists who specialize in sculptures and have a group show with that. Yeah, there's so many ideas. I have this, I love the Victorian meaning of flowers, and I have another series called Floralesia, which is the collection of flowers. And it's a mixed media piece with illuminated magic lantern slides that go in the back. And they're really fun because they're dark and they're happy and they're full of lust and full of disease and they're just contradictions. But I also thought, but when you go into the Victorian meanings of flowers, it's so interesting what they used to symbolize and secretly send out these messages, but they're very fascinating. So moss means like maternal love, and each flower has its own meaning. And I really wanted to see a series of beds that were filled with those flowers that meant, you know, that meant that object. So I did one. And one, there's one piece that I did that I love. It's a Victorian wicker casket that I got, I think, on Craigslist. And I filled it with live forget-me-nots that I had dug up from my garden. And then I laid in that coffin. And I don't know, it was the bee's knees. It was so good. But those projects, they're so big and they need kind of the attention and the studio space. So those bigger projects that kind of just stayed in my head, and I'd love to get at them.
Yeah. That sounds great. Did you have someone photograph you in the
My
casket?
Daughter. Yeah. My daughter was my photographer, and now she's gone away to nursing school, and my son is my photographer while I still have him. So.
Oh, great. So you have two kids.
Yeah.
Daughter and son.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
So my son's finishing high school this year, and my daughter's in Montreal studying nursing. And yeah, it's a
nice
big time.
So you have more time.
Yeah. I do. I just remembered. Sorry. Goals. I would love to do some residencies once my kids are fully fledged and out in the world.
Oh yeah.
I want to travel and do intense residencies places. Like, give me Iceland, give me Finland, give me some little corner of Asia. I'm very open to where.
Yeah, there's some really interesting residencies out there. There's one where you're on a cargo ship. Have you heard about that one?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't really know anything about it. I just remember reading about it a few years ago and the artist actually stays on the cargo ship, and that could be very interesting in multiple ways.
Very cool. So yeah, there's Will Gill, who is an artist in Newfoundland, and seeing his work, I'm really excited to think about a residency in Newfoundland. Would be fascinating. That would be on my bucket list. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you, Marie. This has been so wonderful to spend time with you and learn more about your practice and more about you and your goals and everything. You've got a lot going on, and it's all so interesting.
Thank you, Jen. This has been wonderful. I hope it wasn't too much of a kimball, but good. Lovely seeing you, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Wonderful. Thanks, Marie. That was great. So I'm going to cut it off there, like right before, and we can do some editing. And yeah, that was perfect. That was great. It wasn't combobulated at all.
I almost need like a visual reminder where I don't interrupt. So you like pass over to you
because I don't think you did. It didn't seem that way at all.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that that's kind of like natural conversation flow. People do that.
It was natural. Yeah.
That's what we want. I can't, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't like listening to those podcasts that seem super rehearsed and like not, you know what I mean? Then you feel like you're not getting to know the person.
Yeah. You know? There's one, I forget what it's called. I'll send it to you. I'm sure it's super rehearsed, but it's really lovely. It's, I think it's The Lonely Palette. Do you listen to that? I'll send you a link, but I love yours. I love that there's a great diversity of stuff. I'll take it all.
Mine's kind of stupid, but whatever. It's good marketing.
So I listen to them over and over again because I find it really kind of supportive and driving, you know, that like, okay, I'm hearing this. It's going into my head. I'm getting it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, that's good. I'm glad someone's finding benefit from it. So it's worth it. It's worth it if you're liking it. So this one's going to be really good though. You sounded great.
Before you go, I know we've got a couple more minutes. So you must be exhausted. Like you do so much. And I'm so glad you have Emily on board now, but there's a lot going on.
I think it's not quite as bad as people think it is. You know, a lot of the stuff is automated, you know, like, you know, the Artist Alliance, the most, you know, I don't spend a lot of time on there every day, but I can do it at sporadic times, you know, like, you know, I can do it from my phone. I can, you know, respond to people or whatever. So it's not that, because people say that to me and I'm like, it's not that bad, you know, but you know, I probably work less than you do. I bet.
Well, I'm really enjoying the marketing thing on Kindling, but I'm also overwhelmed and like, oh my goodness. Like, I think it's partly the commitment to goals that you may like bail on or like,
yeah.
And there's, it's just, it is hard because you have a finite amount of time and a lot of chaos and a lot of great things happening, but it's a balancing act. So.
It's, you know, I mean, I don't even do those things. I'd like to, I strive to do those things. I have my list of goals and all that, you know, but you know, I'm super like, here's my organization, right? It's just like a notebook with stuff, you know,
that's the foundation of your empire right there. Though.
My empire. Yeah, it is literally. Yeah. So I get it. I know there's too much going on. I read something the other day that it takes 9 contacts before or 9 bits of the same information before it finally like sinks in, like something on the internet or, you know, that's sort of the average before someone sort of notices you or notices what you're doing or notices whatever it is you want people to notice. Mm-hmm. 9 times.
Sounds right.
Doesn't that sound about right? Because I'm like that. Like I just joined, this is off topic, but I got 2 minutes. I have this new doctor now who actually is on like subscription. She's on a membership basis where I pay her. It's like around $100 a month. And then like I can have access to her anytime I want. Mm-hmm. And which is great. You know, so I can ask her questions. She has her own app and stuff like that. And it took me forever, multiple times, to like sort of understand how her thing worked. You know, it was good for me knowing with the Artist Alliance, it's like, you know, she's like, okay, we'll get this app and then you do this and then you do that. And, you know, and you have all these other things going on in your life. And it's hard to sort of keep track with like, oh, right, I was supposed to go back to that email and then click on this link and do the, you know. So she, luckily she was like savvy enough that she sent stuff to me multiple times. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, I do.
It's hard. Yeah. It's really, you have to, and then, but then people complain like, stop emailing me or whatever, you know, like it's interesting. It's an interesting thing how we're completely inundated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why, yeah. Again, I'm grateful just to be here so I can manage what I can manage, but yeah.
Oh yeah. I love your work so much.
Oh, Jen, that's so nice to hear. Yeah. I'm really excited to be, you know, in your stable and that you saw my work and that you feel that way about it. So,
oh yeah. I think it's amazing. I think what you're doing is amazing. I think it's great. It's great.
Well, I know you've got more stuff going, but lovely talking with you. And again, I hope to talk again soon.
I'll see you soon. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for listening and supporting this podcast. Your support means everything. If you'd like to learn more about the Artist Alliance community, send me a question, or learn about other events or projects coming up, please visit my website at www.gentuff.gallery. See you next time.